Estás escuchando Radio Libre Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Nuestra programación en español está aumentando. Enseguida presentamos el horario de programas en español. Cada mañana, entre las horas de las 10 y el mediodía, ofrecemos un bloque de programación en español. Todos los lunes transmitimos Proyecto Latinoamericano y Enfoque Latino. En los martes presentamos Perspectiva de las Américas, Centroamérica sin censura y Contacto Ancestral. En los miércoles se oyen las voces de la libertad y la insurgencia femenina. En los jueves el programa es Radio Trabajadora nuevamente. En los viernes DJ Bueno presenta La Máquina. Cada día a las 5:30 hay noticias en español con el informativo Pacífica. Y hay más. Como siempre, en los lunes escuchas al Global Local con Augusto César Sandino, Seguno a las 7 y a Yomer Sideshow a las 9 p.m. Martes a las 8 presentamos el Rocker Show. En los miércoles hay Radio Calaca a las 9 p.m. En los fines de semana se ofrece sábado de 2 a 4 Radio Cañón. Sábado y domingo de las 4 hasta las 6, todo es música con DJ Chilango. Sábado a las 6, radio en los Brown Berets. Y domingo a las 8, escuchas a Junior's Yams. Radio Libre Santa Cruz es tu radio pirata comunitaria. Si quieres un show, contáctenos en 427-4523.
Why is it, do you think, children are always too young to hear the truth, but never too young to be lied to, systematically, conscientiously, in the name of education?
This is Teachers for Class War on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Listen online at freakradio.org.
You are tuned to Teachers for Class War on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we are joined on the phone by Rad Dad author Tomas. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. It is good to have you on the air and on the show here.
Thank you.
This is DJ Danielson, and...
And I'm Jessica.
And we're hanging out in the studio here, and like I said, are glad to hear your voice and hear what's going on in the education world as well as in the parenting world and how they overlap, so...
All right.
So just for our listeners who are not aware of who you are, can you tell us your most public feat, which I imagine is the zine? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So the last about 4 years, I've been doing kind of a zine on radical parenting. It's called Rad Dad. And it started initially kind of as a space for fathers to begin to talk about kind of radical parenting and the intersections between parenting and feminism and anarchism and all that kind of stuff. It quickly evolved to include voices from everyone, because I think we had queer parents writing and transgendered parents writing, so it began to problematize the notion of just father. So now it's kind of just a radical parenting place, although clearly I do work really hard to try and get fathers writing, and particularly fathers of color as well.
One of the things that's always interesting about a zine starting out is, at first, it's your thought process. It's you gathering, or like you said, it started out with this intention, but it's a zine. So whoever reads it, whoever contributes, it becomes so many more voices than that. And so you mentioned that it has evolved over the years. What's the new one coming out? What does the new one look like?
Well, I'm really excited for the new one. It's our biggest issue yet. Eric Drucker did the cover, and he lives over here, so I basically just kind of emailed him and said, hey, would you be willing to throw a print on it? And he said he'd be happy to. So, and this issue is generally they're open to, whomever's writing, and kind of whatever I get, I kind of put in there. And if writers want some feedback and dialogue about their piece, I'm willing to do it. Otherwise, it just kind of goes in as is. But, and this one, I did kind of put out the call that I really wanted people to begin talking about parenting and anarchism specifically. So I've got a lot of really good essays and kind of pieces about people thinking how those two connect. So yeah, I think it's going to be one of the best ones.
So I don't want you to, blow all the best secrets right now, but I'm really curious. Can you tell us what some of the really great insights were, or some of the things that pleasantly surprised you?
I was pleasantly surprised that that there were a couple. There were some that were very clearly like, you know, here's a platform and here's how these things work, and it was kind of, that was really nice that clearly people had, you know, thought through the kind of ways that they connect in very specific instances, like, you know, about gender and about race and stuff like that. So that was nice. But then there were also really kind of personal pieces that was just more about like our, as individuals, trying to embody kind of our values in our parenting and the mistakes that we make. So that's kind of, and that's always been the nice thing about the zine, is that people can be very kind of theoretical and begin to kind of hypothesize about things, but people also are very self-reflective about mm-hmm. their choices they made, sometimes correct choices and sometimes ones that lead them into more difficult issues. But so that's the nice thing about it. I was kind of, it's pleasantly balanced as a zine, this issue.
Nice. So it seems to me that there's kind of an inherent power. There is an inherent power dynamic when you're raising children. How do you embrace anarchism and give power to your kids?
Yeah, that's the magic question. I don't know. It's difficult. It's I have an older son, and, you know, thinking back on choices I made, you know, I always struggle with, should I have been more, let's say, more direct or more, controlling is the wrong word, but because he made some, you know, I was trying to be very clear with him about choices he makes and the consequences that might come,
mm-hmm.
but when the consequences include, you know, getting in trouble with the law, and that kind of stuff is bigger than, you know, us as a family. That stuff is institutional.
Right.
And it's really scary to, you know, it sometimes seems very safer to be much more authoritarian and say, like, and to take control in that way. And for me, that's the struggle continuously.
I think that that's something that we deal with in the classroom all the time. And even though it's not just 1, 2, 3, or, you know, 5, or however many kids are in the family, you know, I've got 40 kids in some of my classes.
Right.
And so we're trying to set up these systems that are actually going to be effective, where people can get their work done, but they let people realize the consequences of their own action. And so instead of having cops or jails or, you know, anything like that be the end result of poor choices, we have kind of the upset of the system.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just this ongoing balance. And if you have, you know, if during any point in this interview, something comes to mind as like a really successful example of how you were able to mitigate that, I'd be really interested to hear. I don't want to put you on the spot and say like, so how do you do that? but I would be interested if anything comes up and bubbles to the surface.
Certainly.
Well, and one of the things that certainly comes out in the zine, and I didn't realize the timeline. How long have you been writing it?
It's been about 4 years now.
But your kids are significantly older than that.
Yes, they are. I mean, I've been writing about parenting in kind of previous incarnations of zines, but at some point I realized I was doing enough writing about parenting, and I was also looking for other people who were really kind of, because my kids were beginning to enter, you know, the kind of more difficult, you know, from like 8 or 9 on, they had much more of a kind of significant personality and they wanted their choices. And so I started coming into those kind of issues where it was much more, how do I do this without just simply falling back on, I'm your father, so do what I say.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so
that's when I started looking for the other zines doing it, and there were a lot of great scenes that were very mama-centered, and there were none that were kind of, that initially dealt with fathers, and that weren't about discipline, because that's kind of what I wanted to avoid.
And it's also, there's a lot of resources out there for new parents, as there should be, but there's a lot of stuff about babies out there, and it's not that they don't test your principles any more or any less, but there are a whole litany of different situations with a 9-year-old, or like you said, with a teenager who's confronting the criminal justice system, that, you know, your input into how they confront that kind of power structure, obviously, it, like you said, it makes you second guess your own parenting way back when.
Right.
But what kind of what resources are out there for parents when, you know, the kids grow up and they're not that cute and no one cooks dinner for you anymore?
Right. And specifically fathers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the stuff that is out there is really kind of, it seems very, I mean, It was not satisfying when I was beginning my exploration of looking for other people who were trying to maintain radical politics and mm-hmm. parent. And there's also this unfortunate disconnect. You're right. There's like, you know, the younger children, babies, there's tons of stuff out there. There's really amazing stuff out there, particularly now as well. But as parents go through the different phases of parenting, they tend to disconnect from the other parents who are doing it. And so that's partly, I tend to have to like ask people who are like, oh, mom, no, my kid's like 16. What's the point of writing about it anymore? Like, well, to share the stories of what you did can help people who are coming along now. So that's one of the other aspects of the zine that I was really excited about.
It seems too like a lot of, I mean, not that I'm a huge connoisseur because I'm not actually a parent, but I do try and keep some awareness. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of the stuff that is out there for parents of slightly older kids, preteen and teen, is kind of more like how to ensure success, you know, in air quote, you know, you can hear the quotation marks around the word success,
right.
Just sort of like, you know, how to get your test scores up, how to get into the right college, how to support your child academically, but it's mm-hmm. less kind of character development or fundamental beliefs in the world or how to deal with institutionalized racism and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's also a lot about like disciplining and getting them to do, you know, setting rules and boundaries. And I mean, all that stuff, you know, I feel like is important conversations to have with your family and your child. But when that's the sole purpose of kind of discussing parenting, it becomes tiresome.
Right.
It's
absolutely.
Like teaching, right? When that's I constantly have conversations about teaching, where it's like, how do we get students to do this, or how do we deal with behavior, or what's the problem with students?
But mm-hmm.
I think it's just a complete wrong approach to addressing classroom issues.
Well, which brings up one of the other reasons why we're wanting to have you on the show here. You're obviously been writing about parenting, but you're also a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about, one, just the general experience you've had, how you got into that, but also where you see those two things intersecting.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm interested in creating a new kind of project that deals with radical teaching. I know there's a few that are out there, but I would like to begin thinking about it or participating in them. Because I've been teaching for about 12 years. And I teach at the community college level, and I always have. And so I know there's various, you know, differences and challenges that come up at different stages of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But as a parent, like one of the things that it's really difficult, it's another one of these conundrums. It's like I ultimately believe kind of institutional schooling is really a problem. And, you know, as we self-schooled my son through middle school, but then he chose to go back to high school. And I'm a teacher in a system that ultimately I kind of have some serious questions about. And so,
yeah, here we are.
By the way, you're in good company.
Yes, indeed. I know. So it's like, and particularly because I'm, you know, I teach basic skills writing at the community college level. So I'm dealing with many, many students who've just been beat by the system. And like they come into this like in a very oppositional stance, as they should. And
right.
So, you know, the job of like trying to like really teach, you know, empowerment through their own kind of learning skills and also writing. It's sometimes the goals I have of a successful teacher are antithetical to the school's goals of successful teaching. So
absolutely. And sometimes it's like if you have a semester to work with a kid or even a quarter to work with a kid and you've got to spend 85% of that just getting in, like just
mm-hmm.
breaking down
oh, yeah.
the brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
That can really hinder what you're trying to do.
Definitely.
Well, in community college, it's not even a classroom where you've got 5 hours.
Right.
It's
right.
Right. And it, unfortunately, it seems to me that many people like fall back on the ways that they've been taught, or like it just seems to me like if we've got students that have come, that either have like dropped out of high school or barely passed high school or didn't really do well in high school, to continue what worked and what was happening in high school in the college level is completely, it's just setting students up for failure. And then we turn around and blame them again that they don't do well in school, when I think we need to really rethink. The first 2 weeks of school, I think, should be entirely different than the way it's done, with diagnostic tests and kind of placements, exams and things like that, that I think just continue a really negative approach to teaching.
We both jumped to the mic to say, how should it be? Because I'm curious, and I'm in a credential program, so tell me how it should be.
Well, one of those things, here's what I try, like the last thing in the world, well, for me, I mean, I think it's, you know, and I recognize there's a certain, like, you know, there's a personality issue as well, but you know, to be a sustainable teacher, you've got to be able to stand outside of, like, if students like you initially because you can connect with them on various cultural references or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think for me, what I try and do is really kind of create the space with my students that this is that I participate in all the writing assignments, that I share exactly what I ask them to share. And we do a lot of just kind of quick, from poetry to kind of journals to kind of discussing of just whatever, like, the focus of the class is, just kind of jumping into it, having some fun writing, not dealing with any notions of, like, correctness yet, because at this point, in this particular level, and, you know, you do change as every class kind of has different goals, but, you know, I think it's just kind of setting up a space that this is our space and that I'm part of it and I'm learning from you and you're learning from me. It's kind of a key setup. And then you can begin to put in the specific things you need to go over.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are all these scientific studies about how we need to interact as human beings and we need to, you know, have certain emotional comfort before we can effectively learn and engage in academic material. And mm-hmm. the disconnect in terms of what, you know, for example, the UC program is teaching their master's students mm-hmm. about setting the tone versus what these studies say versus oh, wow. what you see in a junior high or high school classroom is just gaping.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that that's your priority. I mean, mm-hmm. There are few teachers that I've heard that have done it really, really well, but it's great to hear another example of that.
Well, thank you. It's tough because one of the things is you, like, risk, you know, you can never deny that you have the power in the classroom, so I'd be like a fool to pretend that's not the case. But
right, because at the end of the semester, you're writing the grades and they're not.
Exactly, exactly. And at the same time, though, like to find ways to make that power transparent is kind of key, and mm-hmm. kind of that they're comfortable questioning that, or, you know, putting forth ideas that will change the direction that I thought I was going in for this class period or this unit or something like that. So
yeah. And I think it's great, too. I mean, I just want to reiterate that I love that you do the assignments yourself. Mm-hmm. That's something, as an artist, that I'm an art teacher right now, and that's right. something that I've just started doing this year, and using my own work as an example and pointing out to the kids that, you know, I've gone through an art program, and so it's supposed to be better, but showing them stuff and telling them stories right. through my art has really helped build a better connection.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, one of the things I try and do is... with the zine that I do, like it's I bring in the pieces that I'm working on for the essays that I'm writing in the next issue, or if I'm doing, like, you know, if I'm writing for other zines, I just bring that in there, or I just do the assignments myself, mm-hmm. you know, with them. So,
mm-hmm.
so if you would, mm-hmm. I want to ask you to talk a little bit about your students.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if there's fathers coming into your classroom. I'm curious how you see. I guess it's kind of a different question, but how you see, like, that power dynamic, or that, you know, that role as teacher as compared to as parent.
Right.
And I'm wondering what kind of, interaction specific to the zine or any other assignment out there, what kind of interaction, you see out there in your classrooms and how your students respond.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Like, part of my focus as a teacher is to kind of look at the despair. I teach, like, the lowest writing class you could possibly take, and it's almost all students of color that are taking it.
Do you talk to them about that?
Oh, yeah. I
okay.
put up the statistics of... Well, I mean, I've learned on this one because I think you want to talk about it in a way of, like, what can we do about it? And,
right.
like, you know, and to create a community, like, let's support each other, because, like... You know, particularly students of color that are male, you know, we tend to lose 50-60% of them. Like, they will not, and in some ways, it's a system that perpetuates itself, because the lower writing courses are, you know, more units, so you have to spend more amount of time on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're raising kids, you know, it's a difficult thing. If you're supporting other, you know, if you're taking care of people,
right.
like it's hugely problematic, I think, and I don't quite know how to, like, deal with that other than talking about it and mm-hmm. recognizing that it's there, and that, like, you know, what are the goals that we have as, you know, teacher and student that we can begin to push us to the next level, if that's their goal.
Right.
And, yeah, so, I mean, and, you know, and then three classes above this one, I get, you know, my transfer level classes, there's majority of white students, although we have a pretty diverse student body, so, and, yeah, you can just kind of see the, it's a classic example of kind of where people have come from and the kind of resources they had access to and the kind of education that they had, that mm-hmm. they experienced versus other people. So, and it's kind of talking about that. And then one thing I recognize as well as a parent, I try to acknowledge that they're, you know, who's in the classroom. So there's a lot of students that are coming back after being in the workforce. There's students that haven't passed high school, they're coming back in, and I talk about parenting and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. and those parents in the classroom, I think, really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. I'm curious, too, to hear about your experience as a parent of students, right? So, like, how do you interact with your daughter? I guess it's just your daughters who are in school now, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. So how do you interact with their teachers, and what are some of the problems mm-hmm. as an anarchist parent that you're experiencing?
Yeah, that's a really tough one. My kids don't like me to talk to their teachers.
Dad, well, you're embarrassing because, me.
Yeah, my daughter had this one teacher who, I mean, and I realize I actually should, I owe this teacher an apology, and someday when I see her, I will apologize. But she, in her, like, in an attempt to kind of talk about the change, a transition from kind of a elementary school to middle school,
mm-hmm.
she talked about how her classroom was like boot camp.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, and then I sent her some email, like, I really found it really problematic to compare your classroom to, like, boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then a couple of these rules that, you know, that seem so arbitrary sometimes. And teachers all talk, you know, the problem is that teachers, all of us can kind of talk a good game, but whether we put it in practice a lot.
For sure.
It's this struggle. I mean, I recognize yeah. I do the same thing. And, I mean, calling... asking that sometimes, unfortunately, has led to kind of not confrontational conversations, but difficult conversations I've had with their teachers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also been allowed me an opportunity to talk about a lot of politics with them when it comes to kind of issues of race or sexism or classism that comes up. Like my youngest daughter, who really polarizes with me in some ways. Like, she's wants to be very traditional,
mm-hmm.
you know, loves fashion and makeup and wants to be like Taylor Swift. And, but I read her little piece on graffiti
uh-huh.
and she was really like, she had done a really interesting job kind of talking about whether some people see it as illegal versus art. And
mm-hmm.
it was just interesting to see her coming to her own conclusions, even though she tends to polarize with me if we were to talk about it over like dinner or something like that.
Yeah, it seems like there always is a difference between who the child is when they're on their own and who the child is when they're trying to define themselves
exactly.
from the
That's
parent.
A huge one, right?
Well, this is, of course, a big theme of the show in talking to folks about preparing your kids, you know, or whatever you think of in terms of, you never let go of their education, but having faith that they're going to do all right in school.
Yeah.
That,
right.
that you're going to send them off and
mm-hmm.
and they'll hold their own, or they'll learn their lessons, or mm-hmm. they'll make some mistakes, but hopefully, you know, have something to draw on
right.
in their relationships to their own education, to their own schooling.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your daughter embraces the fashionista world, and as
Boy,
you,
does she.
And as you wrote about, one of your children questioning their own identity and deciding that they were going to be white.
Right.
You see, you know, how schools can be influenced by different voices or by involved parents or kids who bring a different perspective to their own education. But what does that leave at that dinner table? You're saying that there, you know, it might turn into an argument around the dinner table, but what does that bring back when the kids come home at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm not sure. That's a tough one.
And it probably changes day to day and month to month too.
Oh, yes.
As things go.
Yes, indeed.
Hopefully Taylor Swift will go away someday.
Yeah, I hope so, you know.
I had a really interesting conversation, though, with some of my junior high girls who, you know, are super, super fashion-y. Like, they just can't get enough of it.
Exactly.
And one of them came to me and was like, is it true that Nike has slaves? And I was like, well, let's discuss that. Let's break it down. And, you know, another girl at the table who was, you know, makeup and the whole, you know, Abercrombie from head to toe is like, oh, yeah, they totally do. I would never buy Nike. And I was like, okay, but where are your Abercrombie clothes? You know, and we, like,
right.
broke out the tags and started talking about it. So there's a place where, you know, as a woman who's gone through that stage myself, where everything had to be the right brand name at age 13 and 14.
Right.
And now I know I have my priorities in line. There's a place where I think that we need to let girls go through that, because
yes, exactly.
There's so much bullshit at that age about just getting comfortable in your own skin.
Well, let's be honest, boys go through it too.
Absolutely.
I wanted those Jordans, man.
Absolutely. But yeah, there's
starter
something
jacket.
It's like, you know, I mean, I know teenagers are a huge consumption factor in this country, but mm-hmm. letting kids go through that phase of their own volition and come out the other side might not be the worst thing either.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things that I've learned from parenting from my children, is like to trust them in that way. And you know, like a lot of times they are familiar and they know,
mm-hmm.
but yet, you know, unfortunately there's not a lot of choices. There's some children obviously that are really able to like just kind of step out and do their own thing. But there's so much pressure to kind of work within a system as it is,
mm-hmm.
that, yeah, it's, you just kind of nod your head and be supportive and, and, you know, when they're ready to talk about things, jump on those opportunities, and otherwise kind of just love them unconditionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't really imagine that they're not going to make what maybe even they know or understood or have learned that is not necessarily the best decision, but they're going to make the other one anyway, just to test it out for themselves.
Yep.
Cause
yep.
we've told them what's going to happen, but they need to know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And good for them for thinking for themselves and not being totally dogmatic when they don't actually know what each side of the coin feels like.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean, it fucking sucks that you got to give them $30 for something you don't believe in, but
this is true. Like, what'd you do with your $50? Bought makeup? What?
You did what? I don't support that company.
Right, yes.
So you are teaching a class in 2 minutes. What's on the lesson plan?
I am tonight. What are we doing? We're doing the politics of food. I'm really excited.
Oh, wonderful.
Cool.
Yeah, we're reading a book by Vandana Shiva, so the students really enjoy it, because like it's just fun.
Talk about relevance.
She's
yeah.
wonderful.
She is indeed, and I get to talk about my obsession with Moons Over My Hammy from Denny's. I try to avoid it at all costs, but on road trips, I give myself the one opportunity to eat it, and I'm very happy.
Okay, just this once.
Yes, exactly.
What else? Because there's nothing
the
else open.
Right, right.
Great.
Well, thank you very much for letting me come on the show.
Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great class.
All right, thanks. Bye.
You are listening to Teachers for Class War on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM or freakradio.org. If you would like to call in the studio for some reason, you can call 831-427-3772. And if you would like to make us a donation, you can go to the website, freakradio.org, or send a check to FRSC P.O. Box 7811. SC, that would be Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Thanks for listening.
And Tomas will be at the Barry Anarchist Book Fair. That's the Ides of March. That this year would be March 13th and 14th. The new Rad Dad coming out will be available there. And I think there's even a release party. I'll try to get you some details on the specific panels later in the show.
But Rad Dad is a wonderful zine that you could... He has a website, doesn't he? Can you look that up? You might be able to get it off the web. If not, we will try and find an address for you so that you can get your very own subscription, because they are really, really fabulous articles, writings in that zine.
RadDadZine.blogspot.com. And it does mention the Rad Dad number 17 release party. And there's the Eric Drucker cover, as he mentioned. That's March 11th at 7 p.m. at Rock, Paper, Scissors in the East Bay on Telegraph. So again, check out raddadzine.blogspot.com with some upcoming events, including the release of the newest copy, as well as the 10th annual, I guess, Bay Area Anarchist Book Fair. I thought that last year was the 10th annual.
I don't know. Maybe they're doing that thing where, like, you know how people have, like, multiple 29th birthdays before they finally move on to their 30s?
Grand opening. It says 15th annual on their website.
Well, they need to figure their shit out. But anyways, at least they got the date straight. We know when it's going to be.
The other thing with the banner that you hang is, you know, you keep the 10th anniversary banner for years 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And then you're like, okay, now it's the 15th
Now we can splurge and actually buy ourselves a 15th anniversary.
Speaking of 15th anniversaries, Free Radio Santa Cruz is about to have ours. Now that it is March 1st, it is officially, I think, we can just call it 15 years?
I think so.
Should we just do it
right
now?
I don't think we have to wait for the day. I think we get to announce that we've been on the air for 15 years.
Because it's March.
Maybe short 1 or 2 days, but you know.
Well, the thing is, no one ever was able to really pinpoint a day of...
Then it was March 1st, goddammit, and here we are.
I think we picked the end of March. But point being, it is now March.
We could call it March 8th, International Women's Day.
True, and on International Women's Day, we'll be talking with... Sharon Martinez from Challenging White Supremacy.
Woohoo!
And she mentioned, she's like, are you sure we should talk? It's International Women's Day. I'm like, I'm sure we can make it relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think it'll make sense to y'all next week.
But you were talking about the anniversary party. Were you going to talk about that?
Oh, yeah.
Concert,
there's going to be parties and shows and stuff somewhat to be announced. Some of it's in the works. Some of it's already out there. I just don't have all the dates in front of me. I do have in front of me, though, the sfbookfair.wordpress.com site that includes a big, long speakers list that I'm not going to, you know, name drop the whole paragraph.
But some of whom, I think Ward Churchill, is Tomas going to be speaking?
Tomas is on the list, yeah. Jessica Mills.
I can do two or three,
yeah,
just to get people there.
Well, I'm mostly looking at the parents there, too. Laura Whitehorn, I know, also is going to be there. Yeah, there's a bunch of names I don't know. Oh, Peter Gelderloos will be there. Carlos Martinez. Owen Hill. At this point, I'm just saying names I don't even recognize.
So Terry, one way or Terry the other, Bizzone. This is the Anarchist Book Fair.
Yep. Someone named Jeremy Adam Smith. That seems like a very economics-friendly name.
I was going to say.
Dad was an economist.
Easy to remember that one.
As usual, Bicycle Valet Parking, SF Bicycle Coalition. As usual, the bakery folks. 15th anniversary, you know, I'm hoping it'll be different this year.
In what ways? What do you want to see?
I don't know, just that it looks different, that I don't confuse which year it is, because I'm like, was that last year or the year before? They all kind of blend together.
Yeah.
But
we shall see.
Topics and bios. There's a Howard Zinn tribute with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. Yeah, there's, it's again Saturday and Sunday as well, all the way through till the, end of Saturday, 4 p.m. is the last speaker. Cafe Sunday, good stuff.
Wait, hang on, until the end of Saturday?
End of Sunday.
Okay.
Did I say Saturday?
Yeah.
My apologies.
It's cool. So it's all weekend.
Keith McHenry, Sunday at noon, Food Not Bombs founder. All kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, lots of good zines, lots of good anarchist swag, lots of good conversations.
Oh, speaking of $50 on whatever you don't support, it's like, it's totally the, or Tomas's obsession with Moons Over Miami. Was that it?
Yeah. My hammy, I believe it was.
Okay. I'm not making up Denny's meals or something.
It's
definitely the one weekend a year that anarchists cut loose the consumerism.
Dude, no kidding. You gotta make sure you don't bring too much cash to this thing, because otherwise it's all gonna be gone by the time you leave, and that's not from pickpockets.
Well, and I'm saying this from personal experience, being overwhelmed with
I want that.
But I'm also astounded by, like, let's make multiple trips back to the bike cart or the car or the...
Yeah. And there's really
gigantic
good...
Gigantic BART bag.
There's really good art. Like, Just Seeds has, like, a poster stand of original prints that are really beautiful. So you can totally splurge and get all your anarchist swag there.
Once a year. Yep. Oh, that sounds interesting. I don't want to mess up his name, though, but Tommy Mecca is a writer, artist, and activist. His book, Smash the Church, Smash the State. That just, you know, that sounds good to me.
So I think we should put on some songs and come back with a little bit of information about some incidents that have been happening at UCSD, talk about some actions that are going to be going on Thursday, March 4th. And we'll give you the lowdown on whatever else we can give you in the next hour. Cops don't give a damn about a knee.
bro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. To the boys in blue, that's what boys do. Shine Bell Diallo, they tryna poison you. Me, him, maybe a newborn. They post to protect and serve, but cause you harm. Tear gas and bomb, this is chemical warfare. But we on welfare, so why the poor care?